Today's guest is Australian homeopath John Gamble. John has been practicing homeopathy and naturopathy for over 35 years in Wollongong and the Southern Highlands of New South Wales, Australia. John has authored three popular practitioner books in his Mastering Homeopathy series for practitioners. The first is Accurate Daily Prescribing for a Successful Practice, the second, Homeopathic Treatment of IBS, and the third is Obstacles to Cure, Toxicity, Deficiency, and Infection. His latest book, Mastering Chronic Disease, which is what we'll be speaking about today, is a distillation of his clinical experience with case studies, which has seen major success in the international CAM market with strong sales in Europe and USA. John has also presented seminars on chronic disease in Australia, New Zealand, Indonesia, Japan, and international webinars. John also co-authored books for the general public, including the first, Treat Your Child Yourself, and second, Treat Your IBS Yourself, and the third is Treat Your CFS Yourself. John's focus is on the treatment of chronic disease, with a particular interest in chronic fatigue syndrome and irritable bowel syndrome. He uses traditional homeopathic prescribing, supplemented by a series of nozodes, tautopathic detoxes, and chemical detoxes, which he has tailor-made. All of his books can be purchased at karunapublishing.com.au or contact John at karunahealthcare.com.au. That's K-A-R-U-N-A healthcare.com.au. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the Homeopathy Hangout, where we discuss all things homeopathy from around the world. And now my mum and your host, Eugenie Kruger.
Hello, homies, and a very warm welcome to Homeopathy Hangouts. Today, we have the other part of our Australian homeopathic royalty, John Gamble, on the show. We had your lovely wife, Naima, on last week. So welcome to the show, John. It's lovely to have you on.
It's a pleasure to be here, although I don't think I've ever been called royal before. I'm just a simple fellow like everybody else.
Well, you're a simple fellow with a magnificent brain, because I have just finished reading. Well, I'm reading it for the second time now, your chronic disease book, which I want to jump into. But firstly, I want to hear your story of how you were first introduced to homeopathy, because I know you had a few other interesting twists and turns before you got onto homeopathy. So share with our listeners what your journey's been like.
I think probably it's true for lots of people who get into homeopathy is that they know nothing about it. And then in my case, someone shut me in the door of a homeopath and I had no idea what it was and what I was taking. But I had recurring viral illnesses in my teenage years and was very sick. And I was quite amazed by the healing journey from the remedies. So I guess I wanted to try and understand it more. What was this strange medicine and how can it possibly work when there's nothing in it? So my own personal journey of healing then convinced me of its amazing ability to heal. Yeah.
That's so cool. And I read that you did law publishing and you did an arts degree as well before you did homeopathy. Mm. And you've also done, I think, was it osteopathy and naturopathy as well? Mm. So, you know, don't skimp on the details. You need to tell us about all of this good stuff.
Okay. Well, I've always been interested in writing and literature, and I used to love reading Charles Dickens. And so I kind of had this Dickensian view about the law and about justice and righting wrongs. And so I went to law school and did arts law first. But of course, the reality is the law and justice are not necessarily two things that sit together. So I became very disillusioned with the law school. I finished my arts degree, but I didn't finish my law degree. But I went into publishing because I guess I've always had a pen in my hand my whole life, which is why I've written so many books. And yeah, I was an editor with a publishing company for 5 years before I started studying natural therapies seriously. And when I did study natural therapies, I started with osteopathy. Yeah.
Incredible. Did you continue using the osteopathy? Because I do know that homeopathy and osteopathy can actually work together quite well. I know Jill Turland talked about how you can use megapotencies and actually palpate the changes in the spine. I mean, that's, if I was going to do any other therapies, I think osteopathy would be the one that I'd be really interested in.
Well, what's been really useful for me is to know when I need to refer someone for some manual therapy and when I know they need more than just a remedy. And that's been really useful for me. Yeah.
And I found a really little interesting bit of information about you, John, that apparently you wrote your first novella at the age of 12, and at 15 you won your town's local short competition.
That's right. Forgotten about that. That's right. Aww. I did. I've always been a writer. So I've always, as I said, so in my teens I was into vampire stories. So I wrote a vampire story. And I remember my English teacher reading it out in front of the class, much to my embarrassment.
Oh. Have you ever heard of vampirates? I had a 16-year-old client in the other day and she told me she's obsessed with vampirates, which apparently are vampires and pirates. And apparently there's this TV series. You know, our clients teach us such interesting things. That was the first I'd heard of that. Can we dive straight into, I've got a couple of your books here and the other one, your IBS one I've got in ebook, and the other one is at my clinic. But this Mastering Chronic Disease book of yours, it's like my new best friend. And it's just such a good book. It was like the penny dropped for me, and it for me felt like the missing piece in my puzzle. And I know you and I've had a quick chat about this before, but literally this book to me felt like the missing piece in the puzzle. And I mean, what inspired you to write this? And tell us a little bit about the book. I mean, I can probably do an hour episode on this book myself because of everything that I've learned from it. But how about you tell us? And this is brand new. It was only released last year, 2022. Tell us about why you decided to write this book and what people find in it.
Yeah, okay. So it's written for practitioners, of course, and it's written from a practitioner's perspective. And it's a mixture of both research and clinical insights over the years that I've been in practice, which is probably about 35 years, I think. So I wanted to write everything down in a way that everybody can understand. And in the act of writing it, you understand it better yourself.
Mm.
So as soon as you take an idea and you articulate it on a piece of paper, you've got to think it through. You've got to make sure that you understand it fully. You see other perspectives about the idea that you hadn't seen before. Mm-hmm. So it was an exercise for myself, but it was also an exercise for everybody else that I could share my clinical insights with and share the components which construct a chronic disease.
There's something in the book that you talk about, the oligo scan. Are you allowed to talk to us a little bit about that? Also, why are there these restrictions around this in Australia? Because, you know, the very first thing I did, I was halfway through the book when I emailed you and I said, John, I want an oligo scan and I want it now because this is the missing piece. But can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Oligo scan is available in every country in the world, including in Australia. But the TGA in Australia is more strict than any other regulator in any other country. So the kinds of clinical evidence they want to see are just not available yet. So I kind of think it's Star Trek, you know, that I think it's unbelievable. So at the moment, for Australian practitioners to use it, they still can use it, but you can't make therapeutic claims around your use of it. Otherwise, you fall foul of the TGA. So, yes, it's still obtainable in Australia, and certainly I've included a lot of case studies using oligo scan in that book we're talking about. So, yeah, I've certainly found it's illuminated some dark corners of some patients' chronic disease histories that I couldn't otherwise see.
Yeah, because that was when I started asking around about oligo scan, I was told, oh, you can't get it in Australia and this and that, and you're not allowed to use it. And that's why, you know, I reached out to you. I thought I'll just get it straight from the horse's mouth. And I'm so glad to know that we can get the licenses through you, which is amazing. Yeah, really excited to get started on that because you can get the results straight away. That's the part that I really like about it. You don't have to go send anything away. You can get the results immediately. And that's the part that I felt is missing in my clinic is sometimes I just need to know what's my client's heavy metal load or what is their minerals like. And, you know, you go and send them away for other testing, but hair mineral only tells you what, you know, has been happened 3 months ago, and blood tests, there can be different levels, but with the oligo scan, you can get that data straight away. And the other thing, maybe you can just talk to us a little bit about that is talk about, you know, the heavy metals and things that get stored into vital organs and tissues. And sometimes when you do the second oligo scan, your results can actually be much higher because it's finally being released and then excreted. So can you just talk to us a little bit about all that?
Yeah. Okay. Firstly, about any pathology test, it's the reference ranges of the pathology test that make meaning for the test, right? So who decides what the reference ranges are? Sometimes it's medical considerations. Sometimes it's political considerations. Sometimes it's corporate considerations. like with cholesterol levels in your blood, they're always coming down over time, which means more and more people suddenly have high cholesterol. So with a liver scan, to use it effectively, you have to know what it is you're looking at. It's not a blood test. So looking at a blood test, you're looking at what is in the venous blood system, and that's the body's principal transportation system, right? What is being transported around the body for the benefit of the organs? But it's not the arrival depot. It's just the transit lounge, if I can put it that way. So your blood tests are the transit lounge. Your liver scan is the arrival depot. What actually arrives into the intracellular space? The tissues, the tiny, tiny little blood corpuscles. What actually arrives from the venous blood into that space? And that's where you're looking at the liver scan. So you might have plenty of, I think you said vitamin D showing in your venous blood, but if your vitamin D receptors are not working, or if you have too much fluoride in your body, that's going to block your vitamin D, and that's not going to show in your venous blood.
Yeah, you had a few case studies there of people that are taking, you know, for example, vitamin D, 1,000 micrograms or IU every single day, and they're still chronically low in vitamin D because...
That's right.
You said, I can't remember, you said the levels for vitamin D is based on bone health, right? But it doesn't tell us necessarily what is optimal.
The receptors, their receptors are not working because of a number of factors. It could be genetic, or it could be, as I said before, high fluoride levels block your vitamin D.
Yeah, so people that are drinking tap water or using fluoridated toothpaste and things like that. A big one for me in the book was copper. And like I said, you know, it really dropped the penny for me. And also, as homeopaths, we take the whole case and we prescribe on the presenting symptoms. But sometimes there's physical reasons for why you're seeing what you're seeing. And I don't think that just prescribing the right remedy is enough. You need to kind of know why you're seeing that. And that's why I love your use of the chelates and using the oligo scans to see what's going on, because we might have a woman with all sorts of hormonal complaints and we might just give her CPR, whatever. But actually, if you knew, if you had an oligo scan, you saw that her copper is really high. And I mean, this is the part I'm still getting my head around, is which mineral antagonizes what and what can be a reason for that. Can you maybe, I mean, the copper and the sludge in the bile and all, and how the estrogen binds with the copper, that part was really interesting for me because I love treating women. Can you talk us a little bit to us about the role of copper, why many people are high in copper, and how we can treat that in practice? So just a little teaser for our listeners.
Sure. Well, this is under the subject of obstacles to cure. And what happens is you spend so many years learning your homeopathic theory, and then you get out there in practice and you spend a good deal of time repertorizing your case and choosing the most accurate remedy you can possibly do, and you give the remedy and it fails. And that's so demoralizing for the practitioner after you've spent all that time and intensity working out the case and you give the remedy and it fails. So we have to take into account as much as we can, what are the obstacles to cure in this patient? What are the things that are going to prevent the remedy doing its job? And one of those is the copper and zinc imbalances that you're talking about. So in patients who have high levels of copper and low levels of zinc, so copper and zinc are antagonists. If one is high, the other one is low. Think of it like a seesaw. Perhaps if I get a pen, since we're doing a video. So if you think of a seesaw, if zinc is here, if copper is high, your zinc's going to be low. So that's the wrong balance. You always want to have your zinc higher than your copper. In extreme cases of this copper-zinc imbalance, we have people who have what's called pyroluria or pyrrole disorder, which is the inability of the body to store its, metabolize and absorb its zinc and B6 properly. And so copper is not checked, like it jumps off the seesaw and flies into the air. Okay, so that's... zinc-copper imbalance has to be corrected for the normal enzyme functions to work properly. So even if you've got the right remedy and it's provoking the right response, all the connections can't be made. Like your body is like an electrical system. The nervous system is an electrical system. So there's gaps in the synapses unless that zinc-copper balance is there.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something that more homeopaths need to know about. And in fact, this is really something that we should be taught at college, because I think, like you said, it can be very demoralizing when you spend so much time working out the right remedy and it's not working. And with people's high toxic load these days, I think it's more than ever that we do know a bit more information about heavy metals, how it's stored, what's the effect that it has on the body. And children are being born with the inherited massive heavy metal loads from their parents and all the interventions at birth and vaccinations and antibiotics from birth. So we need to know this stuff. It should be just, it should be basics in all colleges. Like after reading this book, I'm the hugest advocate for
Well, especially just on the copper issue, especially if you're treating, if you have a lot of children in your practice who are alphabet children, so ADHD, OCD, ADD, those kinds of alphabet things that children get put with, 90% of those children are high in copper. So making sure that you bring down that copper in conjunction with your remedy of choice is going to give you the fast, rapid change and transformation in the behavior and learning and concentration that you want to see. But if you don't recognize that the child is high in copper, it's going to dampen down the effect of your remedy.
And can you just tell our listeners a little bit about why the high copper? What are some of the reasons for that?
There's a, at least in Australia, there's a chronic zinc deficiency because the soil is low in zinc in Australia. But I think also in other parts of the world, we have copper accumulation environmentally. So there are copper pipes in our houses, and there's some research to say that because of the fluoride in the water, the fluoride pulls out the copper from the particles from the copper pipes. We have, at least in the last generation, we have women who had the copper IUDs inserted. So they all had high copper loads. And the other reason is I think there's partly genetic. People's zinc uptake, zinc metabolisms are distorted for a number of chemical and other factors. So it's kind of widespread. And we do see a lot of it in Australia because of the low zinc soils. But I know it's also a fairly universal problem. And in children with ADHD, you can quite often see all the white spots on their fingernails, which is a sign of the zinc being blocked.
Oh, that's interesting. And I love that you wrote about iodine in there as well, because, you know, it's one of those things we don't really get taught about. I did a little bit of naturopathy at college as well, but you don't really get taught that much about using physical iodine and what is a good brand, how much you should give. So I think as homeopaths, you either need to work closely with a naturopath that can advise, because I know you recommend greater celandine or chelidonium in the book as well, like actual herbal doses of it, and iodine supplements, zinc supplements. So as homeopaths, we kind of need to know a little bit about how to either dose all of this or work closely with a naturopath who you can refer to, who can, if you suspect or if your oligo scan results show, you know, issues with iodine, then you can refer them to the naturopath to properly dose.
Well, you can do it yourself.
Well, your book does actually give information on that as well.
But that's the other point. If you've got a child that's iodine deficient, iodine is one of the most important nutrients for brain development in children. Unless you're living in Japan, where you're getting seaweed every day, it's very possible, especially if you're blood type O, it's very possible that you're low in iodine.
And I just want to point out with your book as well, I really like that you've got all the oligo scans, and you've got loads of cases in here as well. So, you know, that's a great way for us to learn. I'm just, for our listeners that are watching on YouTube, I've just got a couple of pages that I'm just holding up. You can see I've already got like underlined. This is a book that's going to be dog-eared in no time. Like I said, I'm busy reading for the second time. It's already got so many marks and underlines and everything in it because you wrote it so beautifully. I love the cases that you've got in here, the symptoms that the person gave. And I also like that you said exactly what you prescribed, because, you know, some, I guess because this is a practitioner book, you've said what exactly you've prescribed. But so many homeopathy books, they won't give the exact prescription, but you've got exactly here what remedies you use, what supplements you use, you know, what other things you use, what, you know, what the result was. And the other thing that I really like is the further reading that you've got at the end of each chapter. Because I was thinking to myself, how on earth did John figure out all of these, what antagonizes what and what's needed for this absorption, that absorption? But I really appreciate that you've got all the further readings in here as well, so people can see which books you recommend to use for further reading, which is really valuable.
you know, it's not really as daunting or as hard to understand as you might think it is. And in fact, it's quite basic, really. And what I've put in the book is just the bare bones, the most important things that have occurred to me that I've seen over the years that can get in the way of our remedies working. It's not rocket science. It's just stuff that's not as well known as it should be, but it's not rocket science. I'm a very simple guy, so if I can understand it, anybody else can.
Well, it does help if you've got 35 years experience behind you. But I have to say, like I said, I read it and the penny dropped, and I'm a pretty simple girl, but even I could understand it. But now I'm really excited about putting it in practice and getting my oligo scan so I can actually start playing around with it. Can you talk to us a bit about COVID? Because this is the nice thing, because the book was released in 2022, you did mention a bit about COVID in there as well, which I was really excited about. Just talk to us a bit about what you've seen, and especially about long COVID. And
Well, I really like treating post-viral chronic fatigue because it's one of the easiest kinds of chronic fatigue to treat, in my experience anyway. And so before COVID, most people with post-viral chronic fatigue are in the younger age group. So that's people in their teens or 20s or early 30s. And they've never been well since having had a major virus, most often glandular fever or infectious mononucleosis. So what I did was I developed a quadruple nosode called antiviral bracket JG, which is available in four potencies, 3200, 1M and 10M. And 90% of those people only need that nosode and it completely clears the virus. Never well since glandular fever. So I was very familiar with this kind of practice when COVID came along. So when COVID came along, we had people who got fatigue after COVID. What I found was the same quadruple nosode, the antiviral JG, was more effective than giving the actual COVID-19 nosodes, more effective. So whatever resonance is created by the merging of those four viral nosodes in the antiviral JG suits treating COVID, which is basically just coronavirus, basically at the end of the day, better than the actual specific COVID-19 nosodes. So then most of the patients who had post-COVID chronic fatigue for more than 3 months, I would give the same remedy and most got better. So it's the ones who didn't get better were the exception. And those are the ones who went on to develop what's called long COVID. So what I found with long COVID was the people who didn't get better on the antiviral JG, they already had a latent disease with them before COVID came. But that latency of the disease was in some cases so subtle, it was almost unnoticed by them. But when I went through the symptoms and the history, they said, oh yes, actually I did have a little bit of this now and then. So there's signs of a latency, of a latent disease presenting. So what has happened is COVID has been, and I should say having real COVID or the COVID vaccines, both have had the similar effect, have been the activators, the instigators or turn the switch on for something that was already latent. So we're not actually treating the virus itself. We're treating the latent, subtle, hidden illness that was already there. I'll be speaking about this at the national conference in Brisbane in November.
You can't give away too much.
I've got some case studies.
Oh, I can. I just said.
Well, that's what I'll be speaking about. But yeah, but I'll be speaking about. I've got case studies to demonstrate what I'm talking about.
I told Naima when I was speaking to her, I can't wait to give you and her both a huge big cuddle because I just have so much admiration for the both of you, and I can't wait to hear you speak and Naima as well. And tell us, John, just anything else you can say to our practitioners that are listening, any other advice that you could give them about treating long COVID or any other tips that you or things to notice? It's interesting that you said about that something latent that got activated, because I do feel that with COVID and like you said, with the disease and with the vaccine, it tended to hit people where their susceptibility or their weak area was. So it was quite different for everyone. But it's interesting that you say that the quadruple nosode worked because it was actually something that was already there, but COVID just activated that.
Yeah.
It makes sense why the nosode would work.
That's right. So with post-viral fatigue, whether it's COVID post-viral fatigue or other viruses, where the quadruple nosode works, the antiviral JG, where they would say, I was 100% symptom-free, completely well, then I had the virus, and then I haven't been well since that virus. So where there's no evidence of any pre-existing disease, latent or actual, this quadruple nosode works in most cases. Mm. So then where there's the pre-existing disease, it means there's already some kind of low-grade inflammation somewhere in the body already. And that's what the spike proteins love. They go for that place where the inflammation is. It could be any part of the body. It could be in your digestive system. It could be in your lungs. It could be in your nervous system, anywhere at all. And that's where it'll go. Wherever the inflammation is, the virus will go there.
It's interesting you say digestive system, because I think you did mention in the book that there's been definitely an increase in ulcerative colitis, right? And also in younger people getting ulcerative colitis, which is something that's quite new and very, very scary, because, you know, it affects your uptake of your nutrition, which is in effect everything else. So if you can't properly absorb your nutrients, then it's
absolutely— Yeah. Well, you can absolutely treat ulcerative colitis with homeopathy. There's no question whatsoever. It's not that difficult, really. And people have said to me, oh, but we were told at college you can't treat ulcerative. Well, of course you can. You just have to have the right remedy. You just have to make sure you test for the appropriate food exclusions, because it's different for everybody, because there's usually a food trigger causing inflammation. And as long as you do those two things, it's 100% curable. And it's not a difficult disease to treat, in my experience.
That's such beautiful news for so many of our listeners. I had a friend many years ago who had quite a large piece of her bowel removed because of ulcerative colitis. So to hear that it can be treated with natural medicine is just such wonderful news for so many people. Something I was going to ask you about is the combinations, John, and I know that Martin and Pleasance in Australia sells a lot of your combinations. So, you know, the chelates and the nosode combinations that you made. So do you sell them yourself as well?
No.
This is a little bit of a side thing that, you know, just recently on the podcast, I've had a couple of guests on. We've just started chatting about this, and this is kind of just as a side note, but just that, you know, people like you create these remedies and then the pharmacies make thousands of dollars from them, but you don't get a royalty or a kickback or anything from that. That's something that I do feel needs to change. It just doesn't feel right, because, you know, after this podcast, it's going to be hundreds of people buying your book and thousands of people buying these remedies from all the pharmacies. And I really do feel there needs to be an energy exchange. Money is just energy. And I do feel that that abundance needs to flow through the homeopath, so that when they're creating new remedies, that there is a royalty built into that. And I'm actually starting that with Danitza Apolline, where I'm selling her golden spiral remedy. And then there is a royalty built into that, which goes straight to her every time I sell her remedy. But I just feel that's something that should be done.
I can see that. In Australia, the dispensaries are very small and they probably struggle, I would say, because of the small numbers of customers who buy their remedies. So I was very happy to give them to them. Mm. And you know what? I was actually more happy to make sure that my formulas would survive beyond me.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They'll always be there in the dispensary there. So that was really what I wanted to make sure would happen.
Yeah, beautiful. Can we talk about your other books as well? You've written some kick-ass books, which is just so practical. I like practical stuff that I can go and read this and then go and use that in my clinic straight away. So I've got Accurate Daily Prescribing for a Successful Practice in front of me at the moment. Maybe tell us a little bit about that book, your journey to writing it and what people learn in the book.
Okay. So to my way of thinking, homeopathy is difficult enough, is vast enough, and there are all these invisible obstacles to cure also getting in your way. We've just talked about some of them. Let's make it easy. Let's make it as easy as possible to use. And if there's a formula that's going to work for most people most of the time, sign me up. I want some.
Right? Me too.
So that's my thinking in writing these books, right? And, of course, people who are classical prescribers criticize the books, because I think one person once called it, oh, that's the Kentucky Fried Chicken version of homeopathy.
Sounds like jealousy fair enough. To me.
That's fair enough. I don't mind that kind of criticism. Yes, it is. But it's also giving people what's going to work most of the time. And if we as practitioners can build our success and confidence in acute prescribing, especially, our patients are going to bring everything to us because they'll trust us, right? So in that green book are so many of the acute remedies that are going to work. if you've got conjunctivitis with sticky eyelids that stick together in the morning, you don't want to use euphrasia, you want to use Arginit. So it's got to be really clear which remedy you choose, because if you can't treat your acutes, you're going to lose patients, right? So that's what that green book is all about. It's giving people confidence to choose the most specific remedy in an acute situation.
That's really great. And obviously, you know, written by somebody who has got decades of experience. So that always helps as well.
Yeah.
And talk to us about the obstacles to cure toxicity, deficiency, and infection. That's another good one. That one's the one that's in my clinic at the moment, but I really enjoy that one too. Just talk to us a little bit about what that is and what people can expect from that.
That's a little bit like the Mastering Chronic Disease, but that was my evolution 13 years ago when I wrote it 13 years ago. Okay, so it has some of the elements that are in Mastering Chronic Disease, but it goes into more the detoxification methods of heavy metals, and it describes the homeopathic heavy metal chelates that I formulated. It also describes the homeopathic chemical detoxes. So there's one for people who have been exposed to pesticides and herbicides. There's one for people who have been exposed to hydrocarbon chemicals, industrial chemicals. And there's a third one for people who have got a widespread xenoestrogen exposure with the consequent proliferation of abdominal fat and hypertrophy that comes with having xenoestrogen exposure. So there's all those things are described in minute detail in that book. So that book is specifically for homeopaths, right? Obstacles to Cure of 2010 is written for homeopaths and is specific and details all the ingredients and what's in all those detoxes. Whereas Mastering Chronic Disease is written for a broad spectrum of healthcare providers who use complementary medicine. Even though I use mostly homeopathy in those case studies, I'm also talking about the other things like the iodine and the vitamin D and the zinc and the copper, all those things as well, which have to be supplemented in some cases.
Mm. And then you have another little book, which I've got on ebook, Homeopathic Treatment of IBS. So why IBS? Why did you write it specifically just on that condition?
I don't know why so many people came to see me with their gut diseases. It was strange. Maybe I just got good at treating that very early in the piece. And so I saw a lot of cases of gut disease, and I saw the changes in those cases over the years of practice. And then I suppose because I got really good at treating IBS, that's why I'm moving into treating inflammatory bowel disease, so ulcerative colitis. It wasn't such a big step for me at the time. You know, I found it useful to break up IBS into its specific disease manifestations, because, of course, IBS is more than one thing. It's many things all with the same name. So if you know what you're treating, which type of IBS you're treating, it makes the treatment method very simple. So it's the same basic idea that I had with the Green Book. I wanted to make IBS simple to treat, simple to see what it is, and offer that to people just to, you know, what I'd found for myself.
And that's, I mean, if your bowels are all over the place, it can really disturb your life, and it can be so embarrassing for so many people and so debilitating. You know, if you have to say no to social events and things like that, because you have to be so careful with what you eat, and, you know, you have to make sure that there's a toilet nearby, or, you know, that's really, really debilitating.
It's a prison sentence for some people.
It is. Mm. It really is. And if you can treat them with natural medicine, it's life-changing for them.
Yeah. We found that also IBS is not just a gut disease. It also affects your mood. It affects your brain clarity, your cognition. So it's more than just a single organ disease. It's a systemic disease.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mentioned this to Niyima as well earlier, but I think we're just really scratching the surface of how important our gut health is. And I mean, these days there's an explosion of articles and research on our gut health. It's the reason we say about, you know, I have a gut feeling, or, you know, like we know intuitively actually that our gut is such an important
part
of overall well-being.
That's right. We're seeing the gradual denuding of the human gut flora from each generation to the next, because parents have reduced gut flora, and then their children have even more reduced gut flora. And that's so because of all the antibiotics in our food. It's because of the chlorine in our drinking water, which kills bacteria in our small intestines. the crappy food we eat with too much starch and too much sugar. You know, so all the people with SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, have all the wrong bacteria because of all the sugar and starch. So it's a gradual deterioration of the human gut flora over time. And with people don't eat fermented food, you know, once upon a time, everybody ate sauerkraut and, you know, they had to preserve their food for the long winter, European winter. Now we have refrigeration. You don't need fermented food anymore.
Well, something that scared the living daylights out of me is I watched a doctor recently, and she said that she took the bowel flora samples of hundreds of medical practitioners, because she's a medical practitioner herself. So when they brought in the vaccines, she got all these medical practitioners to give her a stool sample before and after their COVID vaccine. And she literally saw the bifidobacteria go from millions to zero in like a couple of weeks after vaccination.
Yeah.
And that scares the living daylights out of me, because, you know, we're transferring our bowel flora through our children when we're giving birth. And so we're putting them on such a back foot when they're starting out life. And there's more information coming to light now that actually it is really quite hard to recolonize your gut. So if you've had lots of antibiotics and that's been destroyed, I mean, you can to some extent rebuild that, but it's actually quite hard to maintain those colonies there. And bifidobacteria, you know, is a really huge one in children, especially. And so all these children that have had the COVID vaccination as well. And I'm terrified for what their future looks like for their immunity and their health and their mental health. Because if your gut flora is destroyed and 80 to 90% of your serotonin is made in your gut, what's their mental health going to look like down the track and their immunity?
We encourage our families to make their own kefir yogurt. Because that gives you the widest abundance of beneficial gut flora, and probably the strongest because it's freshly made. And we've had mothers with their children go through the whole of winter with no colds, no flus, nothing, just by having a tablespoon of their homemade kefir every day. So we didn't talk about the immune system in the gut. That's another huge thing as well. But all immunity starts in the gut too.
Absolutely. So, John, it's quite handy that you have your own publishing company. And so people can purchase all your books at karunahealthcare.com.au. Can you just run us through for our international listeners? Because we actually have biggest listenerships in America. So where can people purchase the books in America and in Europe?
They can go to karunapublishing.com.au. Now, I'll just tell you, there's also an American company called karunapublishing.com. That's not us.
Okay. Okay.
If you go there, that's not us.
Okay.
.com.au. We have an international distributorship. So people in the United States can still go to karunapublishing.com.au and order a book there, and it'll be sent to them locally from a local printer in America.
Oh, that's handy. You should make a deal with Karuna Publishing in America. Get them to
Maybe
sell
we should.
Books.
Maybe I think we you should.
And in Europe, it's the same. They can. Is there a way that they can get your books?
In Europe, they can go to Emrys.com, which is in the Netherlands, or they can go to Narayana Verlag, which is in Germany, and they stock our books. Or similarly, we have printers in Europe as well, so people in Europe can also go to karunapublishing.com. In fact, any country in the world, including Asia and South America, you can go to karunapublishing.com.au, because we have an international network of printers that we use. We just print locally.
That's very cool. Very cool. Mm. And I'll just spell out Emrys, E-M-R-Y-S-S for our listeners, and Narayana Verlag, N-A-R-A-Y-A-N-A-V-E-R-L-A-G. But we'll have that in the show notes as well.
Yeah.
John, if you sit back and you think of this 35 years of experience that you've had and this journey that you've had and all the thousands of people that you've treated, all the places around the world that you've lectured, all the books that you've written, what message can you give for homeopaths like myself? I've got 10 years under the belt now, but, you know, for homeopaths that are maybe just starting out or that haven't got quite that experience under their belt, is there anything you would have done differently? Is there any advice that you can give us? Like, what can you tell us about how we can have a 35-year successful career like you?
Well, what I want to say is getting that confidence in using your remedies is just so important. So I hope that I've made that easier for you in writing of the books that I've written. That was my intention. So it's certainly an honor and an immense pleasure to work in the area of homeopathy. It is the most amazing medicine, this, to my way of thinking. And there's nothing like seeing the absolute transformations that take place in people's lives when you get the appropriate treatment for them with homeopathy. And it's deep transformation, not just surface transformation. So absolutely find your area of specialty, if you like, or just your area of interest. That's what we've done in our practice. For me, it was IBS and then CFS were my big areas of interest. For Naima, whom you spoke to last week, she very much developed competence in acute care, treating children's ear, nose, and throats. And as I said earlier, if we can all be really competent and confident at treating acute conditions, that gives us the confidence to go on to treat chronic disease. It also gives confidence to our patients, because a mother will then ask you to treat, you know, Freddie's IBS if you've successfully treated Freddie's ear infection, right? So the acute treatment is so essential, and that gets your patients in the door and gives you and your patients the confidence in the remedies.
That's beautiful. I love that. And on a personal level, I'm super excited to be working with you for my husband, who's had all sorts of things that have gone on all these years. I always, you know, we choose each other in this lifetime, and I've had pretty robust health and my husband not so much. And so he's been to so many practitioners. And when I read your book, I was like, right, that's it. You are the one that he needs to work with. But I'm so excited to use you as a mentoring alongside his case, because I can't wait to learn from how you approach a case by having this, you know, live, my husband being treated by you and seeing how he's going and learning from your methodologies and how you work and how my husband responds. And so I am super excited about this journey that we're going to walk with you to help my husband. So thank you very much for taking him on as a client. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Yeah. I suppose the other thing to say is, for people who want to get into treating chronic disease, it really is all in the organon, you know, and I'm not someone who takes the organon to bed and reads it. You know what I mean? It's pretty heavy going. But the first page says it all, really. You have to know what it is you're treating. Mm. And that's more than the name of the disease, right? So talking about IBS or chronic fatigue syndrome, for example, that's just a name. But what is it? What is the chronic fatigue, or what is the IBS? In this particular patient, you have to be able to see it, see what it is. When you know what it is you're treating, you're more than halfway there. So knowing what you're treating, knowing what the obstacles to cure are, all that is on the first page of the organon, aphorisms 3, 4, 5. It's all in there. Mm. And to the extent that we can all be unprejudiced observers, as Dr. Hahnemann says, because if you bring prejudice into the consultation, you don't see what's really there.
Yep, that's it. Yeah.
So it's all there. It's all there.
Amazing. John, is there any final words that you want to leave our listeners with? I hope we've got them excited about your amazing new book. I think every single practitioner needs to have this. This is something that's going to be living on my desk with all the dog ears and all the marks, and because I can see I'm going to be referring to this quite a lot. Is there any final messages that you want to leave us with?
Look, for people who follow my work and want to ask questions, I'm always happy to answer emails. I don't mind, you know, I don't mind mentoring people who are trying to use the remedies that I've made and follow the ways that I've described in the books. So, you know, please put that out there to the people who are listening. If they're practitioners, I'm very happy to answer any questions if they have them.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time. I'll see you in November.
Okay. See you then. Thanks for speaking with me today.
All the best. Bye.
Bye-bye.